Think we're not, there we go. We're plugged in, finally. All right. Well, I want to welcome everyone. It's wonderful to be together this morning. Beautiful day today. And it's great to see Claudia and Jack with us today. And I was trying to remember, when was it that you moved to Arizona?
May 2018.
Wow. So it's been 3 years since you moved. I couldn't remember if it was two or three, but a lot has happened. It's great to see you. We would love to see John and Jennifer. Jack, I think, has grown quite a bit since we saw him last. So it's great to see all of you and kind of get reconnected again. Today is our last day before the days are short again. Next Sunday, I think we have a time change that's coming up. So, is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. That's what I was thinking. So, we're going to be seeing the days get much shorter and feeling that winter is coming on. But it's great to be here this morning and see everyone. Hope you've had a good week. And I'd like to invite you to open to the book of Ecclesiastes once again, and this week in chapter 10 of the book of Ecclesiastes. So I'm going to read verses 1 through 10. And then later we will get in through the entire chapter down through verse 20. But I'm going to read verses 1 through 10. And he says, "Dead flies putrefy the perfumer's ointment and cause it to give off a foul odor. So does a little folly to one respected for wisdom and honor. A wise man's heart is at his right hand, but a fool's heart at his left. Even when a fool walks along the way, he lacks wisdom, and he shows everyone that he is a fool. If the spirit of the ruler rises against you, do not leave your post, for conciliation pacifies great offenses. There is an evil I have seen under the sun as an error proceeding from the ruler. Folly is set in great dignity, while the rich sit in a lowly place. I have seen servants on horses, while princes walk on the ground like servants. He who digs a pit will fall into it, and whoever breaks through a wall will be bitten by a serpent. He who quarries stones may be hurt by them, and he who splits wood may be endangered by it. If the axe is dull and one does not sharpen the edge, then he must use more strength. But wisdom brings success." I'm going to entitle the lesson this morning to "Choose Wisdom as You Face Life's Folly." We live in a world here under the sun, as the preacher in Ecclesiastes would describe it, that is full of folly. It is full of foolishness, full of madness. We could even say there is craziness going on in the world around us. But that is all the more reason that we need to have wisdom in our lives as we personally embrace the things that are happening or seek to respond to them in the best possible way It's important that we have wisdom. And the writer of Ecclesiastes is pointing out a lot of those fundamental points of how wisdom operates and what it looks like in our daily lives. And what are the benefits of having it? And the consequences of not having it in your life. So what he wants us to understand, I believe, is the difference between wisdom and folly. And to see the great contrast that there is, that there are really two paths in life that are set before us. There is a path of wisdom that we can all follow. But there's also a path of foolishness, and many are on that path, obviously. And we live among people who are engaging in foolishness. So how do we respond? What is the proper way that we as individuals, and it may be a limitation of how much good we can do in that, but nevertheless, how do we conduct ourselves with wisdom? How do we acquire and gain wisdom that can help us? As he says here, wisdom brings success. Wisdom will produce many successful advantages in your life if we are able to have it and practice it on a consistent level. It's going to really benefit us to have wisdom. But what does it look like, and what is the difference between wisdom and folly? So what is folly, and how do we recognize that? So beginning in verse 1, he begins by giving here an illustration of the point that he is wanting to make, and it is one that is kind of an obnoxious point that he is bringing out. But he says, dead flies putrefy the perfumer's ointment and cause it to give off a foul odor. So does a little folly to one respected for wisdom and honor. Now the point that he is making is that a little folly, all it takes is a little folly to spoil much good in life. An example of this is a bowl of fragrant oil that people in those days used to ointment for the body, and it would help to give a pleasing smell. And yet if flies got into the oil and is getting into the oil, they would get trapped and they would die. And then their body would give off a decaying or a foul smell, and it would pollute and contaminate and really destroy the fragrance of the oil, that it would all begin to give off a foul odor. So you have something that took a long time to prepare, something that was of value, and yet a little bit of folly put into it could contaminate and ruin the effect of the entire amount of the oil that was there. So his point is, that is how folly, a little folly in one's life, ruins a life that otherwise has wisdom and honor and has done a lot of good, accomplished a lot of good, and yet a little folly in that life can do so much harm. And so we see this in life. Just recently we heard that over at the Delano Bay camp that many of you are familiar, we used to have a family camp over there on the other side of the water every year, over near home and Purdy and in that area. But two people apparently broke in to the lodge and turned on the water faucets and left the water running in the lodge. And by the time they found it, the roof into the lower level had collapsed into the building and done so much harm and so much damage. So a little folly has destroyed something that has been able to provide a lot of good for a long time. That people have worked hard to have a place for Christians to gather together, and yet a little folly has been able to do so much harm and so much damage to it. We see many examples of this in life where people who otherwise are rational people and who have a good reputation can go out and in a little act of foolishness, they can destroy much good that they have been able to accomplish and damage their reputation maybe for the rest of their life. So we see that the importance of being careful with how we conduct ourselves, that we want to act with wisdom and not have foolishness and folly that can destroy the good influence that a person's life has. So he goes on to say here that a wise man's heart is at his right hand, but a fool's heart is at his left. Now the point that he is making here is that there are two people here who are really moving in opposite directions in their life. That there is the wise person who in his heart has principles of truth and fearing God and righteousness and living with the thought that there is a judgment after this life that we must eventually prepare to stand before God. Things like this, that this man has a biblical worldview and foundation of his life, and this is causing him to live and act and conduct himself in a right way in his life. But the other person, a fool, his heart is guiding him and leading him in the opposite direction. He does not have those values. He does not have that character in his life. And therefore, this man, his life and his heart is guiding him in the right path. But the other man, his heart is leading him entirely down the wrong path. And he is following that in his life. And that's how we have folly. That's where this foolishness and foolish behavior and the life of a fool happens, because in their heart, they do not have the foundation of God and fearing God and serving Him that we ought to have in our life. And without that, then a person is really operating in the darkness. And the fruit of that comes out in their behavior. Now, he goes on to say here in verse 3 that a fool's conduct is obvious to everyone around them. That he says, even when a fool walks along the way, he lacks wisdom and he shows everyone that he is a fool. Now, you can often see and spot a person who is a foolish behavior just by driving along in your car, and you see them walking down the sidewalk. Perhaps you can almost identify the type of person that this is just by watching them walk down the way, because the way they conduct themselves, it is giving off that message to everyone: hey, I'm a fool, and I'm not a rational person that follows the normal rules of life and contribute something of a worthwhile. So they are rebellious, they are harsh, they're just the general appearance and the behavior that they have is giving forth the clear signal that they are not a rational person, really. They are a person who doesn't live by normal operating standards of wanting to be a good person and contribute in their life. You see, a person that is, they will be walking down, they're carrying themselves, they're nicely dressed, they are abiding within the rules, they're doing what a normal person would do. So he is saying that when a fool goes out the door and they start walking, and they're out in the public, everyone can see them, and it becomes obvious to everyone, this person is a fool. So it is something that is clearly seen and can clearly be recognized by others. So he goes on now in verse 4 to talk about how do we conduct ourselves with wisdom when we are in a pressure situation, possibly before a political leader who is angry or who gets upset easily, and he's very temperamental. So he says, if the spirit of the ruler rises against you, do not leave your post, for conciliation pacifies great offenses. And Solomon had a lot to say about being in the presence of the king or being in the presence of the ruler, because he had been in that situation. He was familiar with that. But what he is saying here is that when the ruler, who might have a short temper, and he might speak something very rude or harsh to you in his presence, but he's saying you need to use wise behavior in the way that you respond to that, because when you're dealing with a temperamental person in authority above yourself, that the best response for you to do is to be of a calm disposition and to respond still with a respectful way. That even though you're being treated with anger and being told things that ought not to be said, you respond in a way with self-control and you do not leave your post. In other words, you do not go off in a huff. I'm not going to put up with this. This is not right for him to talk to me this way. No, you remain at your post and you have a conciliatory attitude, and that is the best way for us, for a person in that situation, to bring about a hopeful reconciliatory response from the other person. Because if you raise your voice and you say something, or in your behavior you become an affronted way of responding to it, it's just going to cause the other person's anger to go even higher and do away with any possibility of resolving the hostility or the tension that's in the air. So he is saying that a wise person, the way to respond to it, is to respond with calm and control and keep a soft answer. In Proverbs 15 and verse 1, the Bible says, a soft answer turns away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger. So it is that type of response that we need to have. But he's saying that a rash defensive responses, they will just increase the anger. That is not really going to be effective. It's not going to help anything. So staying calm and rational will reduce friction. and some people have gone so far to say that wisdom is the lubrication of life. That if we have wisdom in our life, that it can avoid friction in most cases, that we will be able to stay calm and have a good response. And this is true working with our employers. It's true working with other people in general, that we need to have a calm, measured way of responding and maintaining control. That is the best possible way that with wisdom we can have best relationships with those around us, even when the person is out of control on the other side and they are not conducting themselves in the proper way. We can recognize that, but it doesn't help to escalate that situation, is what he is saying. So we need to have wisdom. Now, dealing with political folly, this was a big issue in the days of Solomon, and still today we have this issue that we are very concerned about. And so he is addressing that. And he said, there is an evil that I have seen under the sun as an error proceeding from the ruler. Folly is set in great dignity, while the rich sit in a lowly place. I have seen servants on horses, while princes walk on the ground like servants. Now, he's referring here to an error that is committed by the ruler, by the political leader, whether the king or some other level of authority. But it is an error or a mistake that is commonly made. And what he is saying is that they will appoint people to positions of high level of authority who do not have the competent skill or ability in that position. And so, therefore, you're putting people in a position of leadership that do not have the qualification to handle that responsibility. And they are over a lot of people, and therefore many people suffer as the result of an unwise political appointment. So we have political appointees that are not elected officials, but the officials that have been elected sometimes do not use good judgment, and they appoint people to this level of authority that simply are very, very unqualified, and they're very, very inept in what they need to be doing, and therefore they do not handle that responsibility, and people, as a result, a lot of harm is done from that. So he said that folly is set in great dignity while the rich sit in a lowly place. Now we notice here that Solomon did not have this mentality that is so widespread happening today, that there has to be a sense of social justice. That here the oppressed are the rich are the ones who have done all the oppressing. And so the last thing you want to do is ever put a rich person in a position of leadership. No, you want to bring them down on the bottom. You want to put up there people that are they're loyal to the party, they are espousing the cause as it was, and so you put them people in there, but they are not qualified, they're inept. And here you have people that are qualified, but they are disqualified because they're rich. And yet they are the ones who have the most ability and have the most experience and could do the better job. So the result is that we have a lot of people in government who have no business being in that position and do not have the ability to take that responsibility and handle it properly. So he said, I have seen servants on horses while princes walk on the ground like servants. So there's a need for competency. What kind of people do we need to have in government? We need to have competent people in those positions of leadership. And it doesn't matter how much money they have. It is whether or not they are going to be competent and whether they are going to represent the needs of the people and take the office seriously that they are accepting. That my job here is to render the services for the people that I'm assigned to be in charge of. And if they are not competent, then they should not be in that position and they should not be appointed to that position. But often that is the case. And that is what he's saying. There's an evil that he sees here in this world that happens so often. So there is risks in daily life. And this is a part of wisdom that we need to understand. That in your daily life, you're going to take risks. I've had a lot of people here in this pandemic have bought into the notion that the number one thing that we need to have is safety. We need to be safe. And so we need to, stay at home. We need to close the business. Everything is centered around being safe. And the fact is that you cannot live in an entirely safe world, even in your home. There's always going to be risks involved. So how do we mitigate those risks? We need to have wisdom. We need to have practical wisdom in our daily life. Now he says, he who digs a pit will fall into it. And that is possible, that if a person goes out and they dig a pit in their yard, or maybe it's on a construction site, and you leave that pit open, then there is always the danger that someone will come along and fall into the pit. So what do you need to do? You need to put up barriers. You need to put up tape. You need to put up signs. This is a pit here. This is dangerous. Don't come near it. It doesn't mean that you don't dig the pit. You don't do the project. You say, well, it's too dangerous. We can't do that. We can't build this new building here because that open pit, somebody might fall into it. No, you're willing to take the risk because there's a larger reward on the other side of the risk. But the way that you deal with it is you have wisdom in that. And so he says, whoever breaks through the wall will be bitten by a serpent. Well, that's a possibility. That can happen. So you need to be watching for snakes. Where I grew up in West Texas, we had to watch for snakes everywhere we went. Literally. Because we had rattlesnakes, we had all sorts of snakes out there. But you don't just say, well, I can't go outside the house because there's snakes out there. You have to be willing to say, I am going to be watching out for them. If I'm going out here through the weeds and, you know, the tumbleweeds and all that's out there in West Texas, I'm going to be watching all around me because there could be rattlesnakes under these bushes. And he says, he who quarries stones may be hurt by them. So he's out working in the quarry. And as you're digging and loosening up the rocks, there's a possibility that a big ledge of rocks will come loose and it will fall down and crush you. So you have to be prepared for that. You have to know how to deal with those kind of things. And he who splits wood, he said, may be endangered by it. So you're splitting wood with the axe, and that can fly up and hit you in the face. And other things can happen. And he says, if the axe is dull, one does not sharpen the edge, then he must use more strength. So part of wisdom is keeping your tools sharp. You know, you go out and you sharpen the axe before you start chopping the wood. And that's just good common sense. It's going to make your work easier. It's going to make your work safe. But some people will say, well, that's too much trouble. I don't want to have to sharpen the axe. And so as a result, they're hitting the wood so hard and exerting more effort and more strength. And that's going to increase the possibility of having an accident. So we always have safety measures. We always have safety precautions. And when you're on the work site, there's accidents that happen at work all the time. And so what do? Companies have preparedness and they take safety measures and training. And look, if you're going to be operating the forklift here, this is how you do it. If you're going to be operating the power saw, then you have to have the goggles. You have to have the safety. And through good training, that is how you cope with these risks and dangers in life. You don't just shut everything down and live in fear for the rest of your life about the possibility of some dangerous accident happening. That's just the way life is. But most of those accidents can be avoided by wise precaution. And so in life, there is dangers and risks that are always avoided, and they can't be avoided, but they can be reduced. And that is where wisdom comes in. So wisdom, he says there in verse 10, wisdom brings success. And that is a general principle in life, that wisdom will give you the successful advantage that you need in most situations of life that we have to contend with. We need to have wisdom, and we need to have it in everyday life, in just common everyday situations. You're getting in your car, you're going out in your backyard, you're taking out the trash, anything that you are doing in life, we need to have wisdom about it. And that's going to help us avoid many accidents that otherwise can happen, because a fool doesn't think about those things. They just go ahead and they plunge in headlong, and then an accident happens and someone gets seriously hurt. We had this actor the other day who had the gun that was supposed to be blanks, and he didn't check it properly, apparently, and someone ended up getting shot and killed, I believe, on the movie site. And so it's a serious problem that you have in life, that we have to have wisdom in life. And that is how we are able to successfully navigate through life, is when we have wisdom. Now he said a serpent may bite when it is not charmed. And the babbler is no different. Now they had in those days, they had snake charmers. And that is something that we don't see very often in our culture here in America. But if you go over to India and places like that, or places in Africa, you will see the snake charmers. And it's a mysterious skill that they have. And it takes great skill and great training. And working with these poisonous snakes, you have cobras, you have adders, and they are in the basket, and the snake charmer has worked with them that they respond to a musical tune or some way that he has trained them, that when they come up out of that basket, they remain under his control and under his direction. And that cobra could lash out, and it would be, a person would be dead within seconds. And yet the snake charmer, the art and the skill of it is that he has trained that so that he can charge people a fee to come let him demonstrate to them that he has the ability with the snake. And yet there can't be any accidents in that. Because one accident, his career is over as a snake charmer. He's not going to get his fee anymore. And you can't go back and undo the harm after it's done. So he is simply pointing out that there is risk and rewards. Why does a person choose to be a snake charmer? Because there's a big reward to it. If he knows how to do this craft and this art, and he is successfully training these and working with these poisonous snakes, he can make a lot of money. It can be a very rewarding career for him. But he cannot go wrong with it. He has to know what he is doing. Or it will all come out. And he will be exposed as a fraud and he won't ever work again. So there is wisdom in risk and rewards in life. And it comes down to skill and training and diligence and hard work and knowing what a person is doing. Now, wisdom also, though, is involved in the use of the tongue. And so he said, the words of a wise man's mouth are gracious, but the lips of a fool shall swallow him up. The words of his mouth begin with foolishness, and the end of his talk is raving madness. In other words, a fool, as soon as they open their mouth, they begin to pour out foolish statements. But the longer they talk, the worse it gets. And most times, a fool is the only person in the room that doesn't know that they are fools. They just go on talking. And the end of his talk is raving madness. He said a fool also multiplies words. No man knows what is to be. Who can tell him what will be after him? The labor of fools wearies them, for they do not even know how to go to the city. We would say today, they don't have sense to come in out of the rain. A fool doesn't. But he's saying that the words of a wise man's mouth are gracious. So a wise man, when a wise man speaks, they measure their words, they choose their words carefully, and they have a purpose in their use of their words to bring grace to others, to say things that are uplifting, that are kind, that are thoughtful, that are helpful. And so the words of a wise man's mouth are gracious, but the lips of a fool shall swallow him up. Not only do they hurt other people, but they hurt that person himself, because they reveal that person's own lack of good common judgment in the choice of words that that person uses. So this is a serious thing in life. And the Bible, we know in the book of James, talks about the fact of how important it is to control the tongue as a Christian. And that if you do not have control of your tongue, your religion is in vain. That everything else can be destroyed, it can be harmed by the uncontrolled words that comes forth out of your mouth, and you can say things that are harmful and hurting to other people if you do not have proper judgment in the use of your words. He said the fool does not know what is to be. And usually, the fool is a person that doesn't really believe in God. He doesn't believe that his life has those consequences, that he needs to be living for the fear of God and the judgment day that will eventually come. But no man knows what is to be. The agnostic, he has the attitude of life, well, we don't know if there's a God. Who knows these things? And so they go ahead and they proceed as if no one knows what that is going to happen like that. So they do not have any control over what they say. And so the labor of fools wearies them, and they do not even know how to go to the city. It's a pretty sad commentary of a foolish person. But what about if we have those kind of people in politics? If those type of people are elected, or if they are appointed, if they are in a position of leadership over the country, over the nation, it can cause great havoc. So he says, "Woe to you, O land, when your king is a child, and your princes feast in the morning. Blessed are you, O land, when your king is the son of nobles, and your princes feast at the proper time, for strength and not for drunkenness. Because of laziness, the building decays, and through idleness of hands, the house leaks. A feast is made for laughter, and wine makes merry, but money answers everything." So, woe to a country whose king is a child, meaning they are not, they do not have the maturity, they do not have the training, they do not have the skill to become king, to be in a position of leadership that they are placed in. And when your princes feast in the morning, this is not a good sign. That you have elected officials that do not take their responsibility seriously. They need to be working on behalf of the people to provide the goods and services that they are there to provide and make sure that things are being taken care of in the proper way. But if they are feasting in the morning, this indicates a resolute lifestyle that they are not taking seriously their responsibility at all. Now, I understand that in the Russian Revolution, 1917, this happened in Russia to a great extent, where they had the communist revolution of takeover of the government in Russia. And most of these people were young teenagers, in many cases, that had no training and no skill. And all of a sudden, they overthrew the Tsar, they overthrew the existing government, and they themselves were in power. So many of these young people went out to the wealthy landowners' dachas and mansions, and they took those over for their own homes. And so here you had the people who were in power over the nation of Russia. They were partying, and they were immature youths that had no idea what they were doing. And so millions of people suffered and died under that regime, because once they were in power, they did not think about the people, and they did not have that maturity to understand the consequences of what they were doing. So he says, woe when your king is a child, when your king is unqualified, when he is self-centered in some way. But blessed are you, O land, when your king is the son of nobles and your princes feast at the proper time. Now, the son of nobles, you have a system in England, for example, that is the royal family. Now, the royal family takes a lot of criticism. We all know that. They're in the limelight, and they seem to always take a lot of scrutiny and controversy surrounding them. But one thing about the royal family is that from the time they're born, they are being trained and they are being prepared to understand what it means to be in the royal family. And most of them, I would say, take that responsibility pretty seriously. I don't know for sure about this Prince Harry and what all is going there with him and Meghan Markle and all of the tabloids that are talking about what's going on with them. But nevertheless, the point that he is making is, blessed are you, land, when your king is the son of nobles. These are people that have been trained up from the time they are young to understand leadership, and they have much more qualifications than sometimes you see when a youth is put into that position who has no skill whatever and no maturity to be able to handle the responsibility. So he says, because of laziness, the building decays, and through idleness of hands, the house leaks, or the rafters sink in. Now, it's, I think, just mostly an illustration that he is saying about what happens when you have this in government, the seriousness of it. But in your house, you need to be watching for leaks. I think we all understand that. And they had flat-top roofs in the land of Israel. Most of the roofs were flat, and there's no runoff on those roofs. They would have the beams of the house, and then they would have some kind of mud and plaster, and they would have lime on top of that, but then it would develop cracks. And they had constant maintenance problems with those roofs. So he said, because of laziness, the building decays, and through idleness of hands, the house leaks. A feast is made for laughter and wine makes merry, but money answers everything. So it's not a good situation when you have political leaders who have a atmosphere that they are surrounding themselves, that everything is about fun and pleasure. And if we need it, we just print more money, and money answers everything. So it's all about material enjoyment of life. It's not about the serious things of taking care of the responsibilities of the nation. A good leader, a wise leader, is always going to be thinking not of himself, but of the people that he is serving, the people he is representing. How can I better serve their needs? And how can I better provide the services that they need in the most affordable, and to help the economy to prosper so that everyone benefits as a result of the nation through the good leadership that is being demonstrated? That is a wise leader when you can have that. And he's saying, blessed are you, land, when your king is the son of nobles and your princes feast at the proper time. So there's a proper time for having a celebration. There's a proper time for having food and drink and things of that nature. But to just make that the focus is a serious problem of leadership, and is going to destroy and do great harm through that company. So he's pointing out that wise people care about how leaders conduct themselves, how they govern, what kind of decisions they make. But now, as the final verse here, he is putting in once again this precaution. Do not curse the king even in your thought. Do not curse the rich even in your bedroom. For a bird of the air may carry your voice, and a bird in flight may tell the matter. Even in the bedroom of your home, you think this is safe, this is a secure place. I can say whatever I want. I can revile the president. I can say all the bad things about those leaders that is in my thoughts, because no one is going to hear about it. No one's going to know about it. He's saying, don't be so sure. Those things have a way of getting out and getting back to the person. Have you heard of Alexa? So we need to be careful what we're saying. And I'm being careful what I'm saying. I'm being careful what I'm saying because we're on Facebook. And we could be deplatformed. When I say something about the mandate, I'm going to refer to it as cookies. There's words that we can't say in this pulpit, or else we will be kicked off. So we need to be careful what we say, and he has talked about this before, that a wise person understands that if you're going to go down and speak to the government official, there's a proper way and there's a proper procedure how to go about it. That you need to have proper control and proper way of presenting the case that you want to make to have the best possible chance of being heard and a favorable result as a result of it. So he's saying, do not curse the king. He may be a scoundrel. He may be no good. He may be causing all of these problems that he's describing earlier, that you have a youth put in here, or someone who is inept, he's unqualified, and they are out here feasting and partying and going to the Bohemian Grove or whatever you want to say about it, that they are doing as elected officials that they shouldn't be doing. But don't revile them, because that can get back to them. So, you know what is better for us to be doing for our elected officials? We need to be praying for them. Don't be reviling them. Don't be cursing them. Pray for them. That's what the Bible tells us. 1 Timothy chapter 2, verses 1 and 2, he tells us, therefore, I exhort, first of all, said that supplications, prayers, intercessions, and giving of thanks be made for all men, for kings and all who are in authority, that we may lead a quiet and peaceable life in all godliness and reverence. For this is good and acceptable in the sight of God our Savior. So we should not be speaking evil of our elected officials. We need to be very careful how we speak of them. And the best thing that we can be doing, after all, we need to be praying for them. So thank you for your attention this morning. We need to have wisdom in life. That is what Solomon is seeing. That is what he is recognizing. That in our life, wisdom is the thing that reduces the friction. It allows us to have success in life. Sometimes that means wise use of words, the calmness, disposition, patience, being able to remain under control and in control of ourselves, being willing to take appropriate risks. There's nothing wrong with taking appropriate risks in life. Sometimes that's how we are going to have a better reward, is we're willing to take some risk, but have wisdom, because there is risk involved. And you dig a pit, you have to put up signs. You can't just go off and leave it out there open for everyone to walk into. So be careful. Use wisdom. Use discretion. And be diligent in your life. And there can be success that we can have, even when we are surrounded by a lot of folly, by a lot of madness that is going on. Conduct yourself according to wisdom, and you will have the best possible results that you can have when we conduct ourselves in the proper way. We're going to stand and sing the invitation song. If you're subject in any way this morning to Jesus, to His invitation to come to Him, to receive the forgiveness of sins, the promise of eternal life that He has made to all of us, to be added to His church, to be added to His kingdom, we're going to stand and sing the invitation song. We invite you to come while we stand together and sing.
You paid a debt you did not owe. I owed a debt I could not pay. I needed someone to wash my sins away.